You are listening to Powder Radio. Brought to you by Powder Magazine.
Welcome to Sponsored, brought to you by Powder Radio. I'm your host, Mike Powell, and this week on the program, we have one of the living legends of the early days of modern twin tips. I'm talking about Skogan Sprang, and we're going to talk with Skogan about those early days in skiing and how he once moved to the Tahoe area with the dream of becoming a pro snowboarder. Well, that didn't happen. He ran into Eric Rohner and realized professional skiing could be an option for him. And we'll talk about that professional ski career, his achievements at the X Games, some of his filming career as well. And then we'll talk about his injury. He had it all taken away. Well, not totally taken away, but we'll talk to him about the injury that compromised part of his career. So sit back and we'll get Skogan Sprang on the line. How's it going?
Going good, yeah.
You're in Squaw Valley right now?
No, actually, I live out in Park City area now.
Oh, damn. I realized you took the job with the U.S. team, but I didn't realize you had to move. So when did you move to Park City?
Just recently, really. So I worked with the team for almost for like 4 years out of Truckee, and I didn't really have to move, but I thought it was a good move to make. I'd spent enough time out here where I was stoked on it and kind of was ready for a change, I guess you could say, and just wanted to test it out. So dove in and did it.
And you're from the Northern California area, right?
Yeah. I grew up down in the Bay Area, right in Mill Valley.
So is this your first move out of Northern California?
Yeah. It is, actually.
And how's the beer in Utah?
Beer is definitely 3%, but all you got to do, rule one, buy bottled beer and you can get normal beer.
So that's all you need to know?
Yeah, it's not too bad. It's manageable.
I know you're traveling. What's your next trip? It sounds like you're heading out this weekend.
Next trip is just a little short trip with my girlfriend, my fiance, actually. We're just doing a couple day vacation because I'm going on a 3-week trip in March. So we're going to Switzerland for the next World Cup. It's at this place called Silva Plana.
Okay.
And then straight to Oslo X Games and then straight to World Championships in Spain. So we got 3 big contests in March.
Nice. That's awesome, man, that you're on the circuit and getting all over the world. But let's start talking about your ski career. You grew up in the Bay Area and want to know how you got into snow sports in general. Were your parents big skiers?
My dad was a big skier, but he didn't start skiing until he was about 20 or 21.
Okay.
But then he fell in love with it so much. He moved from the Midwest out to San Francisco for a job in the late 60s. So once he fell in love with it, yes, he wanted to make sure that we were able to enjoy it. And so I've got an older brother. I've got a younger brother also. But when I was really young, my older brother and my dad, and we would all trek up on weekends to all over Tahoe, sometimes North Shore, sometimes South Shore, sometimes down in Bear Valley, and just kind of all over the place. But he made it happen. We would go on weekend warrior trips. And
nice. And so you had 2 other brothers. And growing up, what was the age split? Were you guys pretty close? Or do you guys beat the shit out of each other? Or how'd that go?
We're all 5 years. My older brother, he beat the crap out of me sometimes. And then my little brother came along and I passed along the favor to him. And we're all 3 boys and my dad. So we had a lot of testosterone and boys running around doing all kinds of crazy stuff.
Was your mom around then?
Oh yeah, my mom was around. She's just the sit back and watch the show, you know, and hope that none of us hurt each other too bad or came home bleeding or scraped up or crashed.
She was the manager.
Yeah, let us do our thing and just hope that no one got too destroyed, I guess.
Yeah. And when you were growing up, did you play any other sports other than skiing?
I did a lot. Skiing, being in the Bay Area, was definitely like a second or third sport that you didn't get to do as often. So I played a ton of soccer from a pretty young age and then pretty competitive till I was about 17 and 18. And then I skateboarded a ton from a really young age as well. Yeah, you know, biking and mountain biking too. I mean, I was right in the heart of the beginnings of mountain biking. So definitely was multi-sport. I was just outdoors all the time doing something, you know, focus on one sport for a few months and then shift gears and focus on something else. And I mean, I think all that stuff definitely helped in the long run, being well-rounded as an athlete and just having different skills from different sports that all kind of mesh together at some point.
Yeah, I think that's something that you can see throughout your career and the tricks that you do. You actually switched to snowboarding at one point. That transitioned into your skiing as well.
Right. Yep.
So when did you switch to snowboarding when you were growing up?
It was pretty late. I skied from when I was 3 every year, bunch of weekends, till I was right about 17. I was like a junior going into senior year in high school. And my older brother, basically, he snowboarded from the very beginning. He got into snowboarding, you know, in like 1987, 88, pretty early on. And since he was doing that, we would have to go to the resorts that allowed snowboarding. So it kind of limited our places a little bit. I always had a lot of respect for it because I was a skateboarder, but I always found myself at home on my skis. And so I would chase him around the mountain and basically we'd just hit every jump in sight. And sometime there, right around 96, snowboards actually got to a level where I thought technology's advanced, the boards are looking better than they were, twin tip designs come around, like people are doing really cool stuff, might as well learn how to do it. I'd take my brother's snowboard and hike up the hill at the end of the day and do like a couple little runs and try and do it. So I was always intrigued by doing it. Right around 96, I went full time. I probably still skied 5 or 6 days a year. I didn't want to forget how. I put all my time into snowboarding. I worked at a ski shop in San Rafael called Demo Ski.
Okay, it sounds like a high-end place.
It was a high-end demo place. We had skis, we had boards, we got the shop deals. So me and my buddy Rich would drive up to Tahoe, and we spent 2 or 3 days a week in Tahoe snowboarding.
And this is after high school?
I graduated in 96.
Okay.
And then it was in between, and I was enrolled in college, but I really didn't have much interest in that at the time. I did fine in school, but I just didn't have an interest in getting a desk job.
There's a lot of people that when they get out of high school, they don't have that interest and they want to go follow their passions. It sounds like you did. Some people go back to school and some people realize that their passions have taken them on a route where they find a career. And it sounds like that's the route you went.
Yeah, pretty much. I was in college at the time, but there was a lot of skipping class going on in there. At this point, we were kind of plotting our move to Tahoe and figuring out the industry a little bit by working in the shop. I snowboarded full time, back to the original question, for about 96, 97, and 97, 98 was the first year that I lived in Tahoe.
And you headed up there, took a job at a shop, and were focused on refining your skills and becoming a pro snowboarder. Was that actually in your head at that time?
Yeah, that was. The funny thing is that there wasn't many pro skiers at the time.
And skiing was a little lamer at that point in time.
I don't look at it as being lame. I guess at the time for me, snowboarding had progressed more into what I liked, which was freestyle and surf and skate influences. And, you know, people were hitting rails and doing things that I thought were cooler. I always followed Scott Schmidt, Glenn Plake, and there was so much extreme skiing action in Tahoe that I really have a place in my heart for that too.
When I say lame, I mean, if you take Schmidt, Plake, and the whole extreme people out of there, there really wasn't much going on. So you had a handful of heroes and the sport was about to change and you were about to help make that change.
Exactly. And as far as the heroes go, there was just more to look up to as far as a route of a career, if you want to call that. There was these pro snowboarders that had pro model gear and they were movie parts and doing this whole package that I thought was really cool. You know, I saw a viable place to do something.
Yeah, there was a ton of money in snowboarding at that point as well.
It was blowing up, yeah. There was more opportunities at that time for that. I guess a funny side story there is my buddy Rich that I moved up to Tahoe with, one of his best friends from high school is actually Eric Rohner.
Okay.
I played soccer against Rohner in high school, actually. He was a really good soccer player too. So we were mutual friends. And he was one of the first people, I remember, he came to visit us in Tahoe. And he was essentially a pro skier. At the time, he had some sponsors and he had some stuff going on, and a little light bulb went off in my head and realized, like, hey, Rohner's a pro skier. There's actually stuff going on in skiing also. Kind of clicked a little bit, like, wow, maybe I should look at all of it. Essentially, my real goal in the middle there was I wanted to be a pro at both, actually. That was possible at the time.
Jimbo Morgan.
Yeah, there was these like border cross, skier cross races going on and with the backcountry and things like that. I thought, hey, maybe there's a spot for some crossover, you know, and meshing them together. And
God, at that time, that would have been so amazing as there was butting heads between the sports, probably not on the top level, but on the bottom level. And if there was that one pro that was top of the game in both, that really would have been bridging the gap. And right now I look and I see Sean Pettit doing that. I don't know if you've seen him snowboarding lately.
Yeah, yeah. I see him snowboarding quite a bit. And then like Sammy Carlson jumps on his board and dips around quite a bit in the POW. And of course, with all the no board stuff going on, it's cool to see. There's definitely room for crossover. And you should, if you're a mountain person and you've been skiing for X amount of years, I feel like you should at least know how to snowboard. It's just fun to switch it up.
Yep. So in your career, you're a snowboarder, you realize Rohner's a pro skier and there might be a future there. How does getting online, and were you getting on ski boards first or skiing on longer skis first? How did that whole thing come together with Line Skis?
No, I never got on ski boards, for the record. You know who facilitated all of that was Chris Ausmus.
Okay, the Dragon.
Yep, the Dragon. And it was the year that he designed his pro model ski, the very first one, with Line. And so backing up just a tiny bit to the kind of the end of the year before, I had a couple pairs of skis that we had bought through work. And there were a couple of these like old heli skis. They were a Vocal Explosive.
Okay.
And they were just sitting in my closet, essentially, for a little while. And I had a roommate who was a super hardcore skier. And he kept telling me, hey, man, you got to get on those skis. Those are the revolution. Those are the new stuff. They're insane. You got to check them out. And so finally, I mounted up this pair of skis. And the other thing was, we're at Alpine Meadows, which there was all these other skiers that were pretty cutting edge at the time. Clint Fiala and Rod Adams. And Carlos, they had this whole crew of guys with spiked hair and leather belts with spikes. And they had the whole scene, you know, and I'm watching them. And I snowboard with them quite a bit. And I kept telling them, I know how to ski. And I saw them trying to do these tricks and stuff and grabs. And I was like, I know how to do a bunch of that stuff. And they kind of would laugh and be like, yeah, whatever, cool. Sure. And so finally, I mounted up these skis and was blown away how they worked, for one. And was just like, whoa, these are really sick. And then that was the start of skiing more than boarding that spring. And I ripped around with a rat pack of guys at Alpine. And it was like every single day we went out there, there was something new happening, or we'd build a new jump, or someone would try a new trick. We were doing little switch 180s without twin tips at that point, realizing that was possible. A season of that, and that spring, I also met Constantine, who has made Chapter 3, he made Butter, he made a bunch of Tanner's movies.
Yep.
So I met him through this other group of guys, and he offered that I should be in his next movie. And at this point, I'm this kid, and wow, I can be in a ski movie? Like, awesome. Things are happening. So moving along, then we did a road trip out here to Utah. I did my first ever contest, which I think was the first Red Bull Huck Fest ever at Snowbird in 99. Wound up meeting Chris Ausmus. He liked the way I skied and looked at the sport, and he invited me to film a little bit. He was making this movie, Clay Pigeons, I believe.
Yep.
So my next move, I guess, he told me, Line's going to be at Vegas. You got to come to this big show. So just like every other wannabe pro skier at the time, I made my little portfolio with a few pictures and this and that, and went off to Vegas. Me and Evan Rapps went together because we had got linked up through this filming gig that we were doing with Const, and went to Vegas. I really liked the direction that Line was going, so I was pretty sold on them. I wasn't super into trying to sell a big ski company on me. I liked the way these guys were going, so I talked to Jay and ended up leaving Vegas with a pair of the Ausmus Dragons in my hand.
Awesome.
At that point, that was like unprecedented to have a pair of actual twin tips, because the 1080 ski had only came out that season, I believe. And so it was around for the 2 months prior to Vegas.
Right.
There was no other twin tip skis, essentially.
There was one. It was the K2 Poacher.
Well, the Poacher, yeah.
It just didn't ski that well.
I know. I sold those in the shop that I worked at. We kind of looked at those and we're like, they're a little too short and a little too soft. But I remember seeing a sequence in Freeze of Shane Zox doing a Misty 7 on those things. And I was like, oh, damn, that is cool. Like, I want to do that. So anyway, yeah, I came out of Vegas with this pair of 193 Ausmus Dragons and, you know, skied on those for the second half of the season. And that's what we were filming the Chapter 3 movie in.
You were filming with Raps and Shane Anderson in that?
Shane Anderson, yep. C.R. Johnson, Mike LaRoche.
What was that time like? Was it kind of wild debauchery, or were you guys still a little young and figuring it out?
Oh, yeah, we were young and figuring it out. I mean, there was nothing too crazy, but yeah, we were young and having fun. Shane was definitely one of the ringleaders of the group. I mean, he was one of the faces of the Squaw Valley scene. The spiked hair and studded belt look, the real like motocross crossover look, I guess, if you want to call it. There was a lot of motocross influence on these early guys, which was really cool to me because a lot of their roots didn't necessarily come from freestyle skiing. A lot of these guys came from more of a big mountain background.
Okay.
I saw it as a mesh of big mountain skiing meshed with some freestyle skiing influences. And to me, the backcountry was really high on the list of what was cool and getting out there and discovering new terrain and building jumps and dropping cliffs and things like that. So at the time, it was morphing with more of the direct freestyle mogul aerial influence. Shane and Clint and Rod, these guys were all big mountain skiers that were adapting, I guess, and just doing more freestyle stuff. But it was cool. We had kind of this motley crew group of different backgrounds that essentially the movie all brought together, and we would feed off each other's strengths and kind of egg each other on and talk smack to each other a little bit. Shane and Clint were essentially punk rockers, and then you had Evan and me, and then CR was younger, but we were all more on the hip-hop rap side of things. We'd kind of make fun of each other back and forth, and then Shane and Clint were more of this big mountain influence. Then you got Evan, who was competing on the World Cup Mogul Tour, who had moved out to Tahoe to become a free skier and take on all the new school skiing going on. And then you had me in the middle. I was just stoked to be there in the middle. Couldn't believe a lot of stuff was happening and just feeding off all the different influences. So we were just feeding off each other, and we got a hold of the first couple snowmobiles any of us ever had. And then we'd go into the backcountry and not very deep a lot of times. But for then, it was pretty cool. New things every day. You didn't know what we were going to find or build or what was going to happen. And we were just going for it every day, trying to create new stuff and push ourselves to create this movie. Pushing the sport at the time. It was definitely a really cool time.
And speaking of pushing the sport, when I think of your skiing, one thing that you bring to the table is style. And it was something that was evident from the first video parts I ever saw, is you did things a little bit different than everybody else and you made everything look good. And there was a lot of tricks, the off-axis tricks, which you brought to the table, which really helped change the sport. And was style something that you thought about when you were skiing, or is it just the movements that you made and it was a natural response to being in the air?
A little bit of both. I definitely paid attention to it. To me, it was just ingrained in who I was, coming from such like a skateboarding background. And even just being in California growing up in NorCal, it's surfing, it's skating, whether it's biking, whatever you're doing, there was always that sense of style. And it's kind of the code of honor, I guess, between athletes for those sports, is things like not directly copycatting someone right on the spot, trying to one-up each other. It was all about trying to create your own style, your own pathway, and not really copying anyone else and creating something that was unique. I thought about it, but then at the same time, it was just how I'd always done things, and it was just my natural style. It wasn't like I worked on, you know,
making it look good.
Yeah, that was my natural style. I just tried to enhance it and do it the best I could do, and that's what worked for me. That's what I like to do, so I just embraced that and did what I wanted to do and tried to do stuff differently, I guess.
Well, I think that's a legacy that you're going to have, is, you know, people who look back on the sport, and when you see some of the early parts, I mean, you stand out. And I look at Sammy today as the top of the mountain. He's able to do everything, make everything look good. Before there was Sammy, you were skiing in Alaska. You were able to podium at the X Games and ski urban. And you're like Sammy before Sammy came around, although he was probably a little grom at that point watching your video parts. Was it a focus to do all different types of skiing, or it just happened?
No, it was definitely a focus to try to do all aspects. I just thought that was to be the best skier you can be, or to be the best guy out there, whatever you want to call it. I figured you had to be good at everything. And then back then it wasn't as specialized, so you could do more of that. You know, I love to ski half pipe. I love to ski jumps. I love to ski urban rails. I did look at it as you should be able to ski every aspect of free skiing, or whatever you want to call it. You should be good at all these things. And I just enjoyed it too. For me, always the big mountain and the powder and backcountry stuff has always been the pinnacle goal of being in the mountains and enjoying it, creating cool looking shots or images, really just being out there and enjoying the mountains and the soul aspect of that. But then I equally love being out in urban areas and getting creative with some setup and getting technical, you know, playing around in the streets, sliding metal. That's equally as fun, just in a totally different way. So
I heard you say something to the effect of, to be the best, you have to ski all the different aspects of skiing. And when I think of your skiing, I don't know you well, so I can't really say I know your personality, but it never really struck me as you were focused on being the best and you were going to win. It was more, you're going to create something that people were going to be fired up on. What was your mindset in competitions? Did you care, or was it just another thing you did?
I mean, I definitely cared, but I'm fairly competitive. I definitely want to win and be on top. But then that being said, it wasn't the end all be all. If I didn't do well, I was really happy if I was on the podium. I wanted to be at the top. You know, if I was second or third, I didn't beat myself up and think, oh, I'm a failure because I wasn't number one. I was fairly happy. I was always competing against yourself. If I could land my run and do what I wanted to do, I was okay with that. So I don't know, somewhere in the middle there. I am very competitive and I do like to win.
But you weren't totally pissed off if you didn't hit the podium. You weren't breaking skis, throwing shit and being like, God, I'm better than that.
Yeah, I mean, you'd be pissed off a bit, but it wasn't the end of the world.
I would think that putting together a great part would be more rewarding in a season than walking away with a medal.
Yeah, I think I wanted to impress and I wanted to have my peers be stoked on what I was doing also, like for the sport. Going back to the code of honor between athletes, you know, and that's in skateboarding, that's really been ingrained in me. And it's like, you know, you want to do things the right way.
Yeah.
I want everyone to really look up to you and be that rider's rider where they're like, yeah, you know, going about doing things the right way so that your fellow skiers and riders, you know, do respect you and don't think you're cutting corners or taking advantage of people or situations, you know, creating something that is genuine to who you are.
If you think about creating things that are genuine to who you are, you did that with a countless amount of films. One that really sticks out in my mind for me growing up, it was one of the big game-changing movies, was Ski Movie. There were a couple movies before that that were big as well, but Ski Movie hit the masses with the new school of what skiing was. And I feel like from there on, the brands got behind that part of the sport and really started putting money behind it, given Line was putting money behind it the whole time. In your movie experience, what were some of the highlights in the filming experience and the people that you traveled with? I know that's a tough question because you did a ton.
All of it was amazing for sure. Like, we had so many good trips and working with all the amazing filmer people, the amount of stuff, especially back then, that went into making the movies.
Yeah.
It's crazy to look back, especially right now with all the digital media going on, that I mean, they were lugging around 65 pound backpacks with two 16 millimeter cameras in there and lugging these things around all day. The amount of work that goes into it behind the scenes is amazing. Basically, the first 3 and 4 years, I was working with Poor Boys a bunch and with MSP. I mean, those guys are awesome. It was a huge honor to be working with Johnny D and with Murray and with Steve. It was amazing. Those guys, top of their game. Everyone was super cool. The other athletes that you'd get to go out with were obviously the other top guys. We just had a really good time all around. And then I had an opportunity through sponsor stuff and through a couple athletes to start filming with TGR. So that was where I kind of transitioned over to filming with those guys. And they really brought to the table this really cool vibe of the travel aspect of it. And definitely went on a couple trips with them. We went on this trip to Turkey and then right to Switzerland right after. And it was like a month-long trip. And I was traveling with Marc-Andre Bellevaux and with Dash Long a little bit and with the Collins brothers. But we had a really, really good camaraderie with the crew. Our filmer, Pete O'Brien, is just the hardest working, most chill filmer ever.
Mm-hmm.
We had a really solid crew that we would film with together all the time. And that was a really cool experience with those guys. I don't know how to pick one.
It sounds like you picked TGR.
Maybe since it was later in my career and had to work for it more, I guess that's part of the reason too.
Okay. In terms of your career, in 2000, you had a motorcycle accident or a dirt bike accident. You were filming something with ESPN. How do you deal with an injury like that? Because it is one of those injuries that you probably will never be to exactly where you were before it, although you can work your way up and get close to that. But how do you deal with that? Because you were an athlete in your prime at that point.
Yeah, it was rough. No, it was definitely devastating. I felt like I was getting to where I wanted to be. And then the whole world crashes down on you and you wonder, is it all over? It was devastating. But I basically was so determined that I was still going to make it one way or another. I definitely wasn't able to ski the same as I was before, which is tough also. But trying to look at where I could be creative and take the sport in a different direction and still do things that I wanted to do and still have an influence and basically be able to enjoy the sport that I love and still make a living at it. And I guess at that point too, it's like doing it the best I could do after that injury is how it was. It may not have been as good as it could have been before, but it was that, hey, I'm at this point, it sucks, but literally just sheer determination to not give up and to make it work is what kept me going. Just being able to live the lifestyle. Get out there, spend days with your buddies out in the backcountry and creating.
And that didn't stop you by any means. After the injury, you still filmed, I think, for what, 5 more years?
Yeah, for quite a while. Yeah, even a little longer than that. But it definitely just made it tough. It is what it is.
It's life, man. It's like shit happens.
Can always be worse. I feel very lucky to have been able to continue on. At that point, I had been lucky enough to have sponsors. I had 3 or 4 really solid sponsors that stood behind me and made it possible to do the rehab full time than I needed to do and stood behind me to sponsor movies and to make that transition from competition into more of a filming lifestyle promotion side of things. So I was really lucky to have those sponsors stand behind me for sure. And at the same time, have people that were interested in what I was doing and to be able to continue doing what I was doing was definitely a huge bonus for me. And I guess the way I looked at it, I was so determined that I was just going to do it no matter what, whether people stood behind and paid me or not. I was so determined that I was just going to do it anyway, just for myself.
That's what all successful people do. I mean, if people aren't believing in them or not, they're still going to push forward,
yeah,
go 110% in, and it doesn't really matter what other people think.
Right. That's kind of what it took. Then as it went on and on too, it kind of takes that more and more.
Well, I'm going to fast forward a little bit. I talked to one of the most important people in all of the Tahoe area. His name is Matt Brogan. And he told me that you had opened up a valet company at one point, probably 5 or 6 years after your last film part. And what was that all about? And were you trying to find a transition into what was next in your career?
Yeah, it was around 2010. I think my last contract with Vocal, I had a couple other sponsors at the time still paying, but it had dwindled down to where I was weighing whether it's worth putting your life on the line.
Right.
And it was getting tougher and tougher to make a living full time out of it. And I actually got a little burnt out, I guess you could say, on the industry side of things and putting a monetary number on your skiing ability. It was a balance. And so I'm sure I could have shopped around and gotten something going. I decided, you know what, I'm going to get a regular job and just ski and do it for myself. And it was amazing. Shoot, some of the best skiing years for 2 or 3 years there. And it was great. I owned a little private valet company and I drove taxi. And the valet thing is summer only. I mean, I skied 5-6 days a week, all day, every day.
No cameras.
You know, occasionally we'd shoot some photos or maybe a little video or this and that, but nothing like when you're going out trying to make a segment.
Yeah, so you had it all to yourself. It was personal time.
And we had our program dialed as far as when we were filming. I had a good crew of friends. And so we'd go out snowmobiling. And I mean, we'd ski 12 to 15 powder laps a day, backcountry untracked powder. And we were just having a great time. It was really good for me to do that. It was also good to have a job that you had to work at, for one, and realize, you know, that, hey, life's not over. You always got to work hard no matter what you're doing. Going to sit back and have this golden ticket where you just sit there and do nothing. So doing a little bit of real world work, put everything in perspective a bit.
And it's come full circle for you. You're now the coach of the U.S. freestyle team. Is that your title?
The official title would be the head coach of U.S. free skiing, and it's the pro team slopestyle.
And how did that all come together? Because when I read interviews back in the day on you, your opinion of the FIS was not super high back in your professional ski days. Now you're working with them a little bit. And how is that in your world?
You know, it's good, really. It has come full circle because the sport's gotten big enough to where it got slopestyle and halfpipe all of a sudden put into the Olympics. Whether people love it, hate it, it is what it is. The sport has grown to this pretty massive level of exposure to where it's in the Olympics. The way I look at it is, why not have someone like myself in there who can potentially influence and preserve some of the roots of the sport as much as possible?
Yeah, that's a great point.
If I don't do it, there's going to be somebody else in there, and who knows what direction they may take it. And so for me, it's about still just embracing the roots of the sport and passing on that legacy to our team members, to anyone involved, organizers, and everybody, and just trying to preserve and just spread that stoke and creativity and the whole package that has allowed this sport to grow as much as it has. It's been amazing. We have an awesome crew of team members, obviously all the best guys and girls out there, and they're all such nice, really cool people, for one, not to mention they're insanely good skiers. So just to get to rip around with them and help them develop their own identity and perspective on the sport and where they want to take it is really cool. And at the same time, even though we're the U.S. slopestyle team, we do definitely value the whole sport, and we want them to be successful athletes all around, pro athletes for the sport. So it doesn't mean that I'm telling them, no, you shouldn't go film this and that. I want them to be a successful, well-rounded athlete. And in order to make the money you need to make, you need to be good at all the disciplines and be out there potentially branching into some big mountain skiing and just developing your brand as a skier in all those different aspects to be successful. So
it's awesome to see this whole thing come full circle, and you're an inspiration in skiing from the early days. You really set the trends for what style was going to be from day one of the modern twin tip era. And it's great to see that you're still involved with the athletes. And I hope to see in a couple years with your coaching, no skier ever grab their knees while flipping and everything looking good. And I think that will be the legacy of Skogen Sprang. And Skogen, I thank you for coming on the show.
All right. Yeah, thank you very much, Mike. And pleasure to be on the show. And yeah, just going to keep having fun and definitely keep grabbing skis and making it look good.
I think grabbing skis is looking good. Grabbing knees is not what I want to see.
Definitely agree with that. No grabbing knees.
All right, man. Well, I'll talk to you. Thanks. So that was time with Skogen Sprang, and there'll be more Skogen Sprang over on thepowelmovement.com. You can hear his inappropriate questions. And Monday on thepowelmovement.com, I'm excited to bring Nitro Circus's own Chris Haffey to the program. Chris has been a professional rollerblader for about 20 years, and he finds himself touring the world with the Nitro Circus crew, and we'll hear some of those stories and how he got to where he is. As always, if you have any show feedback for me, you can reach me at mike@thepowelmovement.com, or you can hit me up on Twitter at Powell Movement One. Thanks everyone for listening, and have a great week.